Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi everyone, just a quick note pre-podcast today. We recorded a new episode, it's coming out obviously now, but it turns out we've done it before. I'm so sorry. It was recommended by a listener, which is amazing, and I sent the list to Jeffrey, and Jeffrey prepared it, and so as it was prepared, we thought we'll just put it out anyway. I hope you don't mind. Perhaps another take on it. But thank you for your patience, and obviously you can skip it if you don't fancy listening to it again, and there'll be another ep next week. Thanks so much. Bye. I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Hope you've survived some of the heat. Hope you're in a good mood. I had an extremely funny event since I saw Molly last.
I think we should precede it by the way that you told it to me. When I phoned Jeffrey and said to check in because I've been away. And I said, how did you deal in the heat? I said, you don't even have a fan. And you said...
I kept the windows out.
Oh, is that not the story you were going to tell about the selfie?
Oh, I was going to tell the story about the selfie.
Yeah, but that's how you told it to me. I said, you don't even have a fan. And you said...
Yes, I do have a fan. And I know because I was taking a cab and the man said to me, oh, I have to tell you, you send me to sleep every night. I said, I beg your pardon. And he said, yes, you send me to sleep every night. You see, what I can't sleep very well, he explained. And so what I do is I turn on true crime television and then I turn over and I just listen to you. And I said, I think that's a compliment. And he said, of course it's a compliment. So I said, oh, you must listen to my podcast, which I do with my daughter, Molly. And he said, oh, yeah, write all that down. He wrote it all down. That's how you go, the usual way. Yes, oh, absolutely. And so we get to the destination. He said, I hope you won't mind me saying this. Could I have a selfie with you? And I said, of course. And it was very sweet. He said, otherwise, my wife won't believe that I've actually had you in the cab.
So Dad does have a fan.
Yes. Sorry, I'd forgotten
such
the prelim.
Such a dad joke.
I'd forgotten the prelim to that.
Yeah, funny. Is that your first selfie request?
Oh, no.
No, well, you at CrimeCon, you must have had a lot of selfie requests.
Yeah, I had a few there, yes, a few. Sometimes it's very funny. It's very, very nice of people. I mean, it's incredibly sweet. I mean, I don't talk about exactly wonderful things, but apparently my voice is quite...
Soporific.
Soporific, so
I wonder if he can't sleep well because he spends all time falling asleep to true crime stories.
Yes, you'd have thought perhaps something else might be a better idea. I don't know.
Something more gentle.
Wave music or something.
Brown noise is the new one over white noise.
Is it? Oh, what's brown noise?
I have no idea. Neither I don't know what white noise is. Really.
Amazed. Two of us who don't know.
And my friend Taves messaged me to say that she has a friend who's a big fan of our podcast. I said we would give her a shout out. Her name's Maggie.
Oh, Maggie, well, thank you for being a fan. That's very, very kind.
That's Jeffrey's second fan.
That's my second fan of the day. I thought, Molly, when she said fan, that was something I was going to wait.
Yes, well, that's what I did say, but you were too eager to tell me that anyway.
Oh, okay. That's it. Anyway, Molly's just been in Los Angeles, so... I want to hear all about that in a bit, but...
It was fine. It was very Los Angeles-y.
Yeah, I bet it was. Was it hot?
Not as hot as here.
Not as hot as here, no.
It's very nice weather, actually.
No, I can imagine. Yeah. I was very envious.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Because it just got unbearable here.
Yeah.
It was all, you know, but it's only 2 days, but it's still very hot days.
To be fair, I did land back on Monday lunchtime, so right in the middle of the...
Right in the middle of it, yes. Yeah. Gosh, crikey.
It's a long way.
It is a long way. Well, these stories...
I finally wrote down all the suggestions that you've all sent in recently, which I've taken neglected to send to Jeffrey as quickly as I ought to have done.
Never mind.
So the case we're doing today is a listener suggestion.
It's suggested to us by Rachel Davies on Instagram.
Thanks, Rachel.
And it's the case of a man called David McCreevy, who, funnily enough, I have done before.
What for? World's Most Evil?
Britain's Most Evil. And it's a particularly unpleasant case, actually.
Oh, great.
You know, I don't want to put you off your cornflakes, but this
or
is...
Or your nighttime
snooze. But this is a particularly unpleasant case. And David Anthony McCreevy, so it's...
Is that what
he's
we're
also
it?
Known as the Monster of Worcester.
Oh, yeah, I remember writing this one down. Okay, cool. Well, here we go with the Monster of Worcester.
David Anthony McCreevy was born in 1951 in Southport in Lancashire. We've got wonderful sands where they used to train racehorses. Red Rum was always trained on the sands of Southport. He was the second of six children to Thomas and Bella McCreevy. His dad was a sergeant in the British Army, and they moved a lot. The whole family moved, you know, army barracks to army barracks, army housing to army housing. He was a very short-tempered boy, and some of his friends called him arrogant. Cocky is a word often used about McCreevy. Anyway, 1967, at 16, he joined the Royal Navy, hoping to make it a career, just like his dad had made a career in the army. He was going to make a career in the Navy. But he has a very short temper. And in 1971, he was dismissed from the Navy after he was court-martialed for starting a fire that destroyed a mess on a ship.
Arson.
Yeah, our old friend. He went back to live with his parents, who at this point had retired and were living in Worcestershire. A leafy county in the West Midlands. He was engaged briefly, but his fiancée broke up with him. Apparently some fixation with a white wedding. I can't quite get to the bottom of what it was, but anyway, he became extremely peripatetic and sacked from a number of jobs. He was...
What does peripatetic mean?
Moving about.
Okay.
He had no work to speak of, and he was drinking heavily. In fact, one of the qualities of this story is the extraordinary role that alcohol plays in it. Anyway, McCreevy finally was so annoyed his parents that they suggested he moved out. And he doesn't know quite where to go, so... They lived in the Rainbow Hill area of Worcester. It was a nice town, Worcester. Nice cricket ground, river and everything, Severn. Now, he moved in with a school friend called Clive Ralph and his wife, Elsie. Clive and Elsie were schoolmates, and they got married in 1968 when she was 16 and pregnant and he was 21. You might perfectly ordinary, you might say. Nothing all that...
Well, apart from if they were schoolmates, they would have been in, not in the same year, but...
No, they wouldn't be in the same year.
Quite a long time.
Right. Anyway, their son Paul was born in 1968, and then a daughter, Dawn, was born in 1971. And when McCreevy moved in to the house with them, Elsie was pregnant with her third child, Samantha, who was born in September 1972. McCreevy paid £6 a week in rent and worked as a labourer in a factory. Clive worked for his father as a lorry driver. You can sense the family. It's a perfectly, you know, ordinary. And when Samantha was 7 months old, to help the family finances, Elsie got a job at the Punch Bowl Tavern, which is about 2 miles from their house. Which meant, for example, and now meant, that McCreevy was also a babysitter. Now, McCreevy's 21. None of this group is very old, but there are three young children. Anyway, Clive has a habit of going to collect Elsie from the Punch Bowl Tavern at closing time, when he helps her close up the pub, has a last drink, and then he drives her back to the house. So far, so absolutely ordinary, you'd think. Except, and it's awful, isn't it? These stories always start with the word except. On Friday the 13th of April 1973, Clive went to pick up Elsie from the Punch Bowl as usual, help her closing. That evening, McCreevy had been drinking in a series of different pubs in Worcester, and he'd got into an argument. You have to remember that he was an extremely short-tempered young man who had a very short fuse, especially when he'd had too much to drink. Anyway, Clive, ever the friendly, picks up McCreevy from the last pub he's in and takes him home so he could babysit while Clive goes and collects Elsie from the Punch Bowl. Turned out to be a very unhappy decision. Sometime between 10:15 and 11:15, most people seem to think it around 10:30, McCreevy became frustrated, infuriated with the children. Starting with baby Samantha, who wouldn't stop crying, he said. At that night, in a fit of what can only be described as fearsome rage, and fueled by alcohol, McCreevy kills all three children, starting with Samantha. She suffers a skull fracture. Dawn has her throat cut, and Paul, who's four, is strangled. But I fear the horror doesn't even end there. He goes to the basement of the house, collects a pickaxe, and he mutilates the children. For no apparent reason. And then, just to add insult, if that's possible, to the injury, in the back of the garden, in the back garden of the house, there's railings between one house and the other. It's, instead of a fence or a hedge, it's railings. And hard though it is to believe, McCreevy impales all three children on the railings.
That is awful.
Yeah. No one can say why. No one has the first idea. Well, imagine what Clive and Elsie must have experienced when they walked back into their house. McCreevy, of course, has disappeared and starts wandering the streets. The alarm is raised, of course. Well, not complicated. I mean, and everybody knows that McCreevy is the only person who's been in the house. And yet the irony is that all the neighbours always said, and continues to say, even after this horrific, monstrous crime of the worst kind of depravity, they all paid tribute to the fact that he was so nice with the children. I think you have to say that alcohol played a very large part in this crime. But that's no excuse. And you have to say, too, that something in McCreevy was out of kilter. But it takes us back to an old argument, darling, isn't it? Is it mad or bad?
Yeah.
Or was it a bit of both?
What did they find him?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm coming to that.
I'm just interested to know what the law said.
He was finally arrested about 10 to 4 in the morning, that same morning, walking the streets of Worcester. At first, he denied knowing anything about the killings. But then, some hours later, at the police station, he admitted it. And I quote, he said, told the police, "It was me, but it wasn't me." And he went into graphic detail. In fact, one of the detectives, one of the first arrivers, responders at the scene, experienced detective at that, was physically sick at the crime scene, as I imagine many people would have been. His only explanation was that Samantha wouldn't stop crying. There was no other. McCreevy, in June 1973, pleaded guilty, and there was an 8-minute hearing. There was no defence, there was no mitigation, and there was no case of diminished responsibility. Now, there most certainly would have been a full-scale trial.
Yeah.
And they would have gone for murder, but with diminished responsibility.
Mm.
And you could argue that such an extraordinary, violent outburst... Well, crikey, it wasn't as if he'd been a serial killer. It was one night.
Mm.
Some people call him the real Friday the 13th killer. You know, that. It was just an explosion, a volcano erupting. But that the lack of a real trial and the fact that he pled guilty essentially meant that he rather went under the radar. He wasn't a famous killer, though he killed three children. And he was given 3 life sentences with a minimum of 20 years. And it wasn't a massive amount of press cover.
He was only 21, so he wouldn't have served that much time actually in prison.
Yes. He was subjected, while in prison, when the nature of his crimes became known, to persistent attacks.
Yeah, because anyone who harms children gets hurt and attacked in prison.
Absolutely. He was subjected to ferocious and repeated attacks, but survived. But when the 20 years came up, the parole board had no interest in awarding him any kind of parole. In spite of the fact that he was still in his 40s, early 40s.
Mm. Surely it did seem like a kind of alcoholic, psychotic break sort of thing.
Yes. Well, that's what we would say now, but we're talking about 50 years
even
ago.
Even though he was a bit all over the place.
Yes, yeah. There were persistent appeals that he should be let out of a closed prison, allowed to go to an open prison. And indeed, in 2006, the Sun discovered that he was in an open prison and published a photograph of him.
Open prison mean you can go out on day release
yes,
and stuff
yeah,
like that?
Yes, day release, and preparation for release, basically. And he was returned to a closed prison. In 2009... an anonymity order was imposed on his case and on the parole hearings. In other words, he'd become so famous for being infamous that you couldn't talk about it, so he wouldn't make it. But in 2013, that anonymity order was lifted because, according to the Court of Appeal, there was a public interest in the possible release of a very dangerous criminal. He'd persistently asked to be transferred out of a closed prison. I mean, that bought fresh publicity. By that point, the case was 40 years old. And in 2018, in December 2018, after 46 years in prison, his release was granted by the parole board on the grounds that he'd changed considerably. Now, there's been all sorts of speculation over the years about what was really going on in that house.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At one point, there's a speculation that McCreevy was having an affair with Elsie, which she has persistently and consistently condemned. Not true, she has said, persistently, and I have no reason to disbelieve her. There are other people who suggest that the baby, Samantha, had been hurt the day before, the evening before the day of the killings. And that he finally saw the light of day in June 2019, just 3 years ago.
Just got out before the pandemic.
Yes, before he went into lockdown. But it is, in many ways, both horrific and yet at the same time, strangely moving.
Well, it's an awful crime. But I don't know if it warrant... Well, it's a tricky one. All that time in prison, he was so young. And, like, it's not... You know, it well, does it, seem like a break. It doesn't seem like
yes.
a...
I mean, the other thing I would say is that, you know, a 21-year-old goes on trial. Surely any... Yeah, even the public defender, even the local solicitor, appointed solicitor... is going to say to him, we've got to go for a proper trial.
Mm.
And we've got to underline your age and the fact that you have you had a psychotic break. It must be.
Mm.
It makes no sense. There's not a single plea of mitigation.
Maybe people just didn't want him to be given any kind of defence.
Yeah, they wanted to lock him up and throw away the key because they were so horrified.
Fair enough.
By what he'd done.
Was awful.
I agree. But I've questioned before and I question again whether you should send a man to prison for 46 years.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Even the Scots, who are tougher in many ways, the Scottish law is tougher, have now said set a maximum of 50 years. No prisoner should ever serve more than 50 years. But it's an interesting case because it really does ask us that central question. Was he mad or bad? Yes, there'd been a bit of arson, as you quite rightly pointed out, but it didn't hit torture furry animals or any of those things. And there's no evidence in his childhood that there was any kind of abuse. You know, it was, as far as we know, it was a perfectly normal childhood. Went to school. Wasn't perhaps terrifically bright, but never mind. They moved around a lot, which didn't help his education, of course.
Yeah.
And his career, which he was obviously decided to go into the services in the wake of his father, had actually turned out to be not the right thing for him.
But it's hard to know necessarily the right thing at 21.
No. Or it's hard to know it at 16, isn't it?
Or at 60, to be honest.
Yeah. So... No, I wouldn't say for a moment that I feel sorry for David McCreevy, but it is somehow slightly concerning. And yes, it was 50 years ago, I accept that. And yes, he certainly deserved to have the key, thrown away the key. And had he gone to trial now, a proper trial, he would have been given a whole life term. I'm not in any doubt about that.
Oh, 100%. But I don't think he would have been kept in prison for 46 years.
No. He would have been given a whole life term.
Yeah. quite rightly. But I don't think you should. I don't think he. If he'd shown
remorse?
Yeah.
It was me, but it wasn't me. Is that remorse?
Well, it's maybe acknowledgement of.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Hmm.
I have found absolutely no prison psychiatrist reports on McCreevy.
Mm.
He was just a pariah, whichever prison he went
maybe
to.
Maybe everyone just didn't give him any time of day because it was so awful what he did.
Yes. It must be that, unless it was in the Ian Huntley group, isn't it? You know, kill two schoolgirls. In this case, you butcher a tiny family.
Yeah.
4, 2, and 7 months. But it's. Thank you for suggesting it, Rachel. It is genuinely interesting.
Thanks, Rachel.
But let's try and say something cheerful.
The Monster of Worcester.
We're going to the theatre.
We are going to the theatre, your birthday present.
Yeah, we're going to see Anything Goes at the Barbican.
Can you name the listeners 3 songs that are in Anything Goes?
No, but you can.
Anything Goes.
That's a good start.
What's the one, I Get No Kick From Champagne?
I Get No Kick From Champagne.
That's in there.
Mere Alcohol doesn't thrill me at all.
I Get a Kick Out of You.
I Get a Kick Out of You.
It's full of them. It's chocker full of...
Yeah. And it's got lots of tap dancing.
This one has 1 tap dancing scene, which brought the house down.
Molly, I have to say, has seen this show before, but she saw it with the original cast, and we've got the touring company, I think.
Yeah, but the lead lady's the same.
Oh, okay.
I think. It's just that you don't have Robert Lindsay.
Well, that's probably a relief.
You've got Simon Callow and... I've got Simon Callow...
And Dennis Lawson.
Dennis Lawson.
Yeah.
I think it would be very jolly.
In
at the Barbican.
Yeah.
I went to Tina Turner, the musical, yesterday.
Good for you. How was that?
It was good. It wasn't quite what I expected. I don't know exactly what
I expected.
It
wasn't simply the best.
It was very good. Tina had a real set of pipes on her.
Good house?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, for a matinee.
Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine it being a bit more like, you know, like, probably like a bit more atmosphere-y on a sort of Thursday or Friday or Saturday evening.
Evenings, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's quite a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's the story of her life, which is obviously like quite tempestuous.
It was.
And you can't really avoid that.
No.
There's something slightly jarring about watching domestic violence and drug taking on a Saturday afternoon
yes.
in the West End.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's important, I get that.
Oh, it's part well, you I can't you can't tell the story of Tina without telling the story of
yeah,
Ike, can you?
Yeah, and they I think they did a good job of it.
It's still going. It's remarkably strong.
Oh, people love it. Yeah, it's really hard to get. It was yeah.
No, it's got tickets. It's got a big following and
yeah, big time.
And lots of people come in from the country. You know, one of those coach trips
oh,
and things
big,
like that.
There were lots of groups of ladies.
Lots.
Lots and lots and lots of groups of ladies, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to Sister Act on Wednesday.
Crikey.
A very musical week.
This is a very musical week. Well,
I went to see Haim on Thursday night.
Good Lord.
And I'm going to see a band called London Grammar on Friday. It's all just fallen in
a heap.
Yeah.
Crikey, that sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm apart from Anything Goes, I'm preparing more podcasts. No, not podcasts, I'm preparing for more television, more filming. So that's the week ahead.
Good for you.
This one's about HMP, that's Her Majesty's Prison, a Fool Sutton.
You're doing a prison series, aren't you?
Yeah, in Yorkshire.
For Channel 5, is it?
For Channel 5.
The first two have been on, have they? Or just
no,
the first one?
No, the first one. The second one's coming any minute. That's on Style.
The first one was...
Wakefield.
HMP.
The Monster Mansion.
Monster Mansion.
And then Style is a woman's prison.
How many... Name top 3 prisoners in Wakefield.
Well, crikey.
Or alumni.
alumni. Well, Charlie Bronson was in Wakefield for a time. The guy who is always known as Spoons, and my mind's gone temporarily blank.
Spoons?
Robert. Yeah.
Spoons. What did he do?
Well, it was always said he ate the brains of a fellow prisoner. But in fact, he didn't. It was always a myth.
Monster Robert Maudsley.
That's it, Robert Maudsley.
Nickname Hannibal the Cannibal after wedging a spoon into a victim's brain.
No, it's actually he stabbed him in the ear. It's the reality. And I've got to find one more now, haven't I? Well, you've got our old friend Levi Belfield.
Indeed.
What more could a man want? Anyway, darling, I think that's enough gloom for a minute.
Enough gloom.
Yes, I think we should thank everybody.
Well, thank you very much to all the people who help us. Our producer, Sam Brain, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you, and thank you for your suggestions.
Thank you so much for your suggestions, your help, support, and friendship. I certainly regard this as almost like a conversation within family, around the dinner table.
Family and friends.
So thank you again. And as I always say, bad things happen to good people. So do please be careful out there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.